Chapter 14. Henrikos reached for the component, stretching down into the machine's innards. Not for the first time he regretted the intimate connection he had established with his armour. It was hard to remove almost all of it now, and it made him bulkier than he'd have liked. The instruments implanted into his pauldrons and breastplate had been helpful in jamming the auger sweeps on the outpost, but their size made it difficult to delve fully into the heart of the device. He had clambered halfway down a narrow cleft between two massive chunks of whirring metal, and now felt as though he had been buried alive. He blink-activated a sensor frond, and a sliver of metal extended from his right gauntlet. He probed again, inserting the sensor into a silver-sheathed input node, and trying to understand what emerged. The word-bearers had done something very strange to their machines. They no longer output binaric derivatives, but seemed to operate on a base 4 internal mechanic, the reason for which eluded him completely. Some components had remained relatively standard, others had been replaced with much less efficient counterparts that made use of leather cam belts, iron cogs, or even organic parts. Devotional script had been engraved everywhere, overwriting any useful markings that might once have adorned the housings. Henrikos shunted the frond output to his helm buffers. Numbers scrolled past, glowing softly on the interior curve of his lenses. Not for the first time, he felt like smashing the whole thing.
"It is a corruption. They have befouled what they were given."
Slowly, painfully, he began to piece together the principal parts of the internal workings. Some functions would take weeks of work to reconstruct, but he had isolated a cartographic projection capability amidst all the esoterica. Performing stellar mapping was notoriously difficult, so even the word-bearers had not ripped out that equipment in favour of their own crazed constructions. Stretching as far as his arm would let him, he pushed a binaric reader into a slot buried near the base of the cleft and activated it from his armour's own power source. More data scrolled down his helm feed, and he smiled grimly.
Gotcha, he growled to himself,
then pushed back up to his feet, scraping the edges of the machine as he extracted himself. Even touching the traitor's equipment made him feel soiled. Henrikos remained thankful he had not had to take off his gauntlets and expose his remaining flesh to the sullied material. Then again, it was becoming hard for him to contemplate removing his gauntlets for any reason. The sight of his bionic left hand reminded him of Ferris's injunctions, and that reminded him of Istvan, and that sent him into the black mood that only killing seemed capable of stirring him out of. It was different for Zaven. He at least had the hope of finding his Primarch and rebuilding his legion. Henrikos had seen the picked feeds from the battlefield, routed over 100 grainy lenses and streamed to every Iron Hands vessel in the system. Ferris was gone. The immortal had proved mortal. The eternal had been ended. After that, there was nothing but rage, a howling, anguished rage that drove out reason. The fighting had remained horrific. The enemy had not stopped coming at them, wave after wave, fueled by their early victory. Survival after that had been just another curse. It would have been better to die fighting, and it was only blind chance that had kept him alive. If he had not encountered Zaven, that chance would never have come. There were times in the depths of sleepless nights when Henrikos hated him for that. There were other times when he admired him more than any other warrior he had ever met. It was Zaven who had guided them out into the void, steering the survivors clear with his calm, steady determination. Zaven had kept his head when even his fellow salamanders were screaming for suicidal vengeance. He was a fine example of his gene father's idiosyncratic creed. In another universe, Henrikos might have been proud to follow Vulcan. His sons were admirable in almost every respect. But there were no other universes, and his loyalty to Ferris would never die, not until his own soul was extinguished in combat, even though he knew that this would happen soon enough.
Never forget. Never forgive.
He broke free of the machine, stumbling as he negotiated the heaps of cables that snaked around its base. The circular wall of the shaft loomed up over him, vast and dark. Henrikos knelt down and activated the power units he had placed around the device. Energies snaked and spat down the power lines, rekindling the blooms of color behind its plasma grills. A throaty rattle kicked off somewhere in the thing's interior, sending coughs of smoke through the organ-like exhausts. For a moment after that, nothing much happened. Blood gurgled through the coolant tubes. Energy arcs lashed between bronze electrodes on the upper housing. Then, slowly, the chamber began to fill with light. Henrikos took a step back, carefully checking the rad levels. Above him, a swirling pattern of luminous plasma began to take shape. He stared at it, unable to read the pattern. The writing on the walls glowed brightly, fed by the power of the machine in their midst. Then, with a realization that made him feel thick-headed for not spotting it earlier, he realized what it was doing.
Zevan,
he voxed, backing away further and gazing up into the shaft.
I think you'd better come and see this.
Yasugai woke on the sickle moon, just as he had woken every cycle since leaving Chogoris, with his face lathered in sweat, his heart's pumping. The last remnants of the dream still lingered. They were identical each time. A planet of embers, the Khan fighting a nameless, faceless shadow. Yasugai always woke at the same instant, when the Khan fell. The Khan had never met an enemy that he had not bested. Perhaps Ferris hadn't either, before he faced Fulgrim. The rumour had always persisted, fueled by whispers of past atrocities, that only a Primarch could kill another Primarch. Perhaps it was even true. Yasugai uncoiled his hands from his lap. He had been sitting in the position for meditation, hoping that the old ways would ease the trouble in his mind. It had not worked. The experience with Ledak had shaken him. He knew that he would have kept going with the storm lightning if Zevan hadn't stopped him. He would have kept going until the flesh had been dripping from the word-bearer's face and his screams were choked with raw blood. Never before had he lost control like that. Killing was one thing. They had been bred to do that. But inflicting pain, that had been consigned to the barbarism before Unity. The entrance chime sounded softly. Yasugai got to his feet and walked over to the basin set into the walls of the cell. As he did so, the door slid open.
"A good time?" asked Zevan, standing in the hatchway.
"As good as any."
The salamander's legionary entered, ducking slightly.
"The same dream?"
"Yes."
"Did you see any more?"
"No, just same. If you have ideas..."
Zevan smiled ruefully.
"Sounds like Nocturne. Other than that, no."
Yasugai rubbed water on his face, scouring the sweat from the skin.
"About Ledak?"
"I understand, believe me. We need to decide whether he is too dangerous to live."
"What do you think?"
"For now, no. He might still be useful."
Yasugai reached for a rough towel.
"But you did not come to talk about Ledak."
"Henrikos has discovered something."
"Ah."
Yasugai donned his cloak, draping the ivory fabric over his devotional robes. The touch was cool against his flesh.
"Good news?"
"You will have to tell me," said Zevan.
They took a shuttle between the two warships. The Sickle Moon had tech crews crawling all over it, repairing damage sustained during the warp jump. The Hesiod hung in the distance, a dark grey slab that reflected little light. The Vorkorder was in the best condition of all of them, though the word-bearers had done their best to defile its once proud lines, and its long prow had been covered in glyphs, making it look almost like a Xenos craft.
"So, you were going to speak to me of Nykaia," said Zaven.
Yasugai looked away from the viewports.
"I was."
Zaven sat easily in the crew berth, hands resting upon his knees, and waited. Yasugai drew in a long breath.
"What you know already?"
"Only that the edict came in swiftly. Vulcan enacted it straight away. By the time news of Istvan III reached us, we had no active librarians in the Legion."
Yasugai shook his head in disbelief.
"What did you do with them?"
Zaven shrugged.
"They took vows. They re-entered the ranks. I don't know how many survived the massacre. Maybe none did."
"And you never think just once this is madness? You never think you throw away your strength?"
"Some of us did. I remember arguments."
Zaven looked down at his gauntlets.
"But it was an order, direct from the Emperor. We are a loyal Legion."
"Hope others were less loyal. Can't imagine wolves giving up their priests."
Zaven snorted in agreement.
"Russ was there, though."
"On Nykaia? Don't know. Not openly. He and Valdor were close, though, and whole place was crawling with custodians."
Yasugai leaned back against the crew berth wall, remembering.
"At the time, I thought it was real contest. The arena was full. You would have liked it, Zaven. Volcano world, air thick with ash. Millions had come. Audience was huge, truly huge. Looked like whole Imperial Palace had travelled to be there."
Zaven listened. Yasugai did not like to remember it too closely, but kept speaking anyway. As his lips moved, the images crowded back into his mind.
"I was never meant to be there," he said. "Should have been the Khan. He discussed it with the others."
"Others?"
"Magnus, mainly. Sanguinius as well. They were the three. Magnus was figurehead, most powerful. But he was not only voice. Sanguinius was always subtle. In some ways, I think he is closest to the ether. On this, though, the Khan always argued same way. He drew up most of rules for Librarius, even though his name was never in data calls."
Zaven looked skeptical.
"This was never known?"
"No,"
smiled Yasugai.
"Of course not. It is as I told you. Magnus never wanted Librarius. He wants every psyker to unlock his full potential. Explore it all, he says. No restraint, no guidance. They had tutelaries fluttering in their ears and speaking to them, though we did not see it. It was dangerous. It needed to be curbed. So the Khan and the Angel both created structure. They limit what psykers can do. On Chagoris, we call it the Path of Heaven. Stray from it, we tell them, and the warp will eat your soul."
"So you knew it was dangerous?"
"Of course. What is not dangerous? Your Promethean creed is dangerous. Being alive in universe is dangerous. We balance on narrow ledge. There were those who thought we are witches, ripe for burning, and those who thought we are gods. Neither could be allowed to win argument."
"But they did. The witch hunters won."
Yasugai nodded.
"For days afterward, I thought mistake had been made that would be corrected. By the time we knew it was permanent, legions were already reforming. So quick. You would think we were always eager to throw away our power."
How did it happen?
I spoke, said Yasugai sadly, remembering. Awkward. It was in Gothic, and so I did not do well. Some oppressions settled on me from somewhere. Magnus spoke, too. He did what we feared. He went too far. He never understands how much fear he caused. If he stood up and said, "We know we must reform, we know we must be careful," then we might have won. But no. He preaches about knowledge and power and gives impression he is prophet. When I hear him speak, that is when I began to worry.
Who spoke against?
A space wolf priest. That was strange. I suspect he is there for some other purpose, but maybe not. One that spoke longest was Mortarion. He filled Amphitheater with poison.
Mortarion? I didn't know he was even there.
I had not expected it to be him. I thought Russ might stand up, or maybe Angron. No, it was Deathlord. He had been on Ulanor too, casting shadow over everything. He has dark soul, and nothing he did on Nykea changed my view.
Zaven thought on that for a while.
I find it strange that his argument prevailed.
Yasugai nodded.
You and I both. I told Araman we would weep for this. And so it was. If any ask, if all not lost in days to come, who killed Librarius, the name is Mortarion. He did it.
Even now the memory exasperated him.
Should never have been left a thousand sons. The Khan should have been there, standing with the Angel and Magnus. No one could accuse him of being sorcerer. It would have calmed the others to see Warrior Primarch making case.
So why did he not go?
Horus ordered him away.
Yasugai stared at the floor, reflecting upon how little he had known.
To Trondax, just as Nykea was preparing. We talked, he and I. He considered rejecting. He could have done. But we both thought Trondax would be over in weeks. Was only greenskins, after all.
He gave Zaven a rueful look.
Only greenskins.
So Horus ordered it, repeated Zaven. Interesting.
I had no idea then, said Yasugai bitterly. No clue. Truly do not believe Horus was corrupted while on Ulanor. Would have sensed something. If someone wished the Khan not to be on Nykea, it was not him.
Who then?
Who knows? Why was Trondax veiled for so long? Why is Galaxy still locked in warp storms? Why does Emperor's Light falter and Star Speaker's visions fail? These are questions. A mind has been at work here, and for a long time.
Zaven looked up. The shuttle was gliding towards the Vorkorda's docking bay.
They did not succeed in everything, he said. Some of us are still alive.
Does your optimism ever end? Just for a moment?
Zaven smiled.
Optimism? That is not what I would call it.
The Vorkorda's flanks enveloped them, throwing shadows over the viewports. Yasugai felt the soft clunk of docking rods extending.
What you call it, then?
Zaven got to his feet, ready to activate the crew berth doors.
Faith, he said, quite seriously.
The Swordstorm broke free of the warp on the system's outer limits and immediately powered up the subwarp drives. As it thrust clear of the jump point and into real space, more ships of the fleet ripped into existence in its wake. The curve of the void's edge shook as it was pierced, throwing coronae of multi-hued light spilling out into the dark. Every vessel crashed into the realm of senses at speed, spearing into existence and powering up to full velocity. The Khan stood upon the Swordstorm's observation balcony, fists clenched, staring at the forward Oculus viewscreens. In the bridge's tiered levels around and below him, servitors and mortal crew hurried silently to bring the ship's systems online and run forward auger sweeps. Qing Zha stood next to the Primarch, flanked by armored members of the Keshig. None of them spoke. None of them moved. Data streamed in, glowing in rune patterns on crystal lenses.
"Ship signatures," said the Primarch softly. "Quickly."
From far below, the telltale whine of lances powering up could be heard. The Swordstorm's deck shuddered as the subwarp drives reached maximal velocity. Void shields rippled across the forward viewers, even as the warp shutters clanged open and the Geller field fell away.
"Nothing in range, Lord,"
came Jian Zhu's voice over the bridge vox.
"No signals on auger sweep,"
confirmed the Sensorium Master, a doer and efficient Chagorian called Taban.
"And the planet?" demanded the Khan.
He was adorned in his full battle plate, with its pearl-white ceramite and gold trim. His Dao blade hung from his side, the scabbard encrusted with rune-studded leather. He felt battle-tense.
"We'll be in range imminently."
Tech priests in the sensorium pits chattered and swayed in their long red robes, slotting mechadendrites in and out of feeder nodes. Queen Zha's eyes narrowed as he studied the incoming data. The only signals on the proximity spheres bore white scars markers, fanning out into a battle spread in the Swordstorm's wake.
"Nothing," he said softly. "No transports, no energy trails."
The Khan nodded. A major system like Prospero ought to have had thousands of ship spores hanging in the void, the chemical residue of void engine release, but the routes inbound from the Mandeville point were sterile. Unease spiked in his stomach, and he quelled it.
"I will see it with my own eyes. Until then, no judgments."
The planet swam into extreme forward sensor range. Blurry pict feeds flickered into life, clarifying rapidly as servitors adjusted the image gain logic engines.
"It's black," said Qing Zha. "I see that," said the Khan.
Prospero had once been a jewel of a world, a pale blue orb the colour of a Terran dawn, banded with lilac and underlit by glistening ice caps. From space it had been pristine, untouched by the industrial hypersprawl that had turned the throne world into a grey-tinged ball of rockcrete and iron. Now it was mottled the colour of burned charcoal. As the images picked up definition, the Khan saw vast swirls of drifting cloud, as thick and dark as those that had swept across Ulanor. His fists clenched the balcony railing.
"Any signals?"
"None, Lord."
The Khan felt anger swell up within him. He had been right to come.
"Bring us into orbit," he ordered coldly. "Instruct the fleet to blockade, then prepare for planetfall. Maintain the sweep and broaden. If you detect anything with a Fenrisian marker..."
Even then he hesitated for a moment.
"Kill it," he growled.
"It's black,"
said Ilya, staring hard at the viewer. Halji did not reply. He looked grim.
"Seriously, Halji? The whole world's black. I've seen slate records of Prospero, and it was beautiful. What could do that to a planet?"
"A legion," said Halji. "A legion could do that."
Ilya felt sick.
"How many people live there?"
"You are our woman for numbers, Sue."
Ilya probably could have dredged the figures up from somewhere, and knew that she did not want to. Prospero had not been a death world like Barbaros, with a few hardship-maddened inhabitants clinging to their hellish lives. It had been civilized, urbane, paradisiacal. It must have been billions.
Billions.
Her throat tightened with anger.
They will be punished. If this was one of ours, they must be punished.
They will be, if it is in his power.
We have to know, Algy.
Ilya rounded on him. We have to know who did it.
We already do.
I will not believe that. Could Xenos have penetrated this far?
Algy shook his head. His usual cheerfulness had gone.
What, Xenos? They're all dead or dying. Nothing remains that could harm us.
With a shock of recognition, Ilya remembered saying exactly the same thing back when she had first met the Khan in orbit over Ulanor.
Nothing remains that could harm us, the Khan had replied. I wonder, Yusugai, how many times and in how many forgotten empires those words have been spoken.
It all seemed horribly prescient. She turned back to the viewport and saw that hateful, chem-scorched orb hanging in space like a grave marker.
There's nothing for us here,
she said, her voice shaking.
We should never have come.
I had to come.
Then we should go soon. Back. Somewhere. Anywhere but here.
Algy rested his immense hand upon her shoulder.
Calm yourself. The answers will be on the surface.
She drew in a shuddering breath and reached out for the sill of the viewport.
I'm not going down there.
You do not have to, but the Khargan will rely on you. Fleet needs ordering. We already receive orders for deployment.
Ilya did not want to hear that. For once she wished that they would just get on with it for themselves. For once she felt as old as the Kronos told her she was.
Route them to my station,
she said absently, unable to tear her eyes from the portal.
It will be done.
Ensure, if you can, that the blockade is in Chang pattern.
It will be done.
How will this end, Algy?
The warrior looked back at her with no hint of a smile on his hide-brown, white-scarred face.
Zu, this is just beginning, he said.
By the time the Swordstorm reached geostationary orbit over Tizca, there was no longer room for doubt. Atmospheric readings streamed in, adding to the visual evidence, and Taban's tally made for grim listening.
Substantial tectonic activity, Lord,
Taban said, looking fixedly at his data slate.
Atmospheric pollution levels far in excess of mortal tolerances. A result, we surmise, of heavy bombardment consistent with mass drivers from orbit, followed by secondary trauma.
Secondary trauma? Asked the Khan.
Which is?
Unknown. We are working on it. Background radiation levels are high, but there are other things. Cloud cover at 100%, formed largely of particulates from earlier destructive phase. Acidic residue. Toxins across a wide spectrum present in lethal quantities, and extensive volcanism across equatorial zone.
The Khan flexed his arms. It was hard to know how to feel. For some reason he wasn't angry, more numb. He kept expecting some grand illusion to be unveiled. Magnus might have been capable of it. If anyone could hide the true state of an entire planet, he could.
Life signs.
Taban shook his head.
Impossible to read. Then we go down. We cannot, my lord.
The Khan glared at him.
Cannot,
he repeated, infusing the word with contempt, as if such a thing would ever deter a Primarch. Taban swallowed.
There is a barrier, something in the upper atmosphere, an etheric field, a truly massive one. We have already run the simulations. Landers will not survive it, nor drop pods.
The Khan shook his head.
Impossible. There must be a way. The world is dying, Lord. The phenomenon is still growing, perhaps a result of what happened here. One does not kill an entire planet without aftershocks.
The Khan looked over to Quang Zha, who stood waiting for orders. He had said nothing throughout the exchange.
Thoughts, Zha?
Quang Zha lifted his head.
There is an obstacle in the troposphere,
he said thoughtfully.
What of below?
Hard to say, replied Taban. We get almost nothing from the surface.
But the field is confined to the upper atmosphere?
It is.
Quinjar glanced over at a hexagonal area towards the rear of the bridge. 18 pillars of pure adamantium enclosed an obsidian floor, each one carved with a Chagorian rune of warding. The Khan followed his gaze, saw what he proposed, and nodded with approval.
Excellent, Shah, he said.
The Sensorium Master made a final effort to dissuade them.
It will be unstable, he protested. We may not be able to extract you or even make Vox contact. I have every confidence in you, the Khan said calmly, before turning to the Keshig. Ready?
Quinjar nodded.
On your command.
The Khan reached for his ornate gold-crested helm. The faceplate was decorated with a Kho-era dragon mask in florid curls.
Let us go.
The 12 Terminators stomped from the observation balcony.
What of the fleet?
Quinjar asked, his helm already donned.
Hasik can handle a blockade. Transmit him the authority signal, and tell him to consult Ilya. We brought her in for these things.
Quinjar bowed, and the Khan heard the faint click of his helm vox switching channels. Taban hurried after him.
The air is toxic, even to one blessed with your particular gifts, Lord. Please do not remove your helm.
The Khan nodded perfunctorily, taking his place at the center of the translation grid.
Thank you for your concern.
The terrain around the city is volatile. At the first sign of activity...
You will wait for my order, said the Khan coolly,
watching as Quinjar joined the others. Taban bowed.
Some readings were anomalous. Would the weathermaker generate a locus for the heart of the city?
Ordered the Khan, ignoring the Sensorium Master and speaking directly to the teleportation operators.
It has done, Lord.
Activate translation.
Taban withdrew, as did the rest of the crew, still within a few meters of the teleportation platform. A force field crackled into life across the pillars, hemming in the hexagonal space between them. The bridge disappeared behind a curtain of writhing static. A second later, it was gone. A chill raced through the Khan's body, just as it always did. For a fraction of a heartbeat, he had the half-awareness of being suspended over the chasm of infinity. The sensation had always been oddly reassuring, as if that were where he truly belonged. Then the lights ripped away. He felt solid earth under his boots and real air filtering through his face mask. Even mediated by his armour, it tasted foul. His Keshig stood about him. Quinjar stood at his shoulder. They all drew weapons, flamers, disruptor-shrouded blades, combi bolters. The Khan kept his sword sheathed. Ahead of him, a scene of devastation stretched away under a darkened sky. Slivers of lightning licked against the horizon, while thunder cracked and growled in the far distance. A tangle of steel struts and crumbling rockcrete extended off in every direction. Towering frames of inferno-hollowed structures loomed up against the dull skies like skeletons. Dust drifted across what remained, heaping in grey dunes like sand. It all glinted faintly in the gloom. The Khan knelt down and scooped some dust up in his gauntlet. Tiny shards of glass ran through his fingers. Far above, the boiling clouds scudded in an unbroken layer. The Keshig moved off, going slowly, their boots crunching through the residue. The low grind of their battle plate matched the tenor of the planet. The Khan looked over to his left. The remnants of a vast pyramid still stood amidst the ruins, its flanks broken open and its carcass thick with grime. An immense battle engine, a Warhound-class Titan, lay in the rubble, prone upon its back, with its armour blistered and blackened. It looked as though it had been thrown down and torched. Everything smelled of burned metal. The whole city reeked of it. The Khan's armor sensors told him that the surfaces around him were still warm from the afterglow of whatever apocalypse had overtaken Prospero. Queen Zha, just a few meters away, turned to face him.
"Where first, Khagan?"
he asked. The Khan got back to his feet and let the glass dust rain to the ground. It had all gone. All of the libraries, the repositories, the arcana. If the Space Wolves had truly done this, then perhaps their power did match their boasts.
"There were caves," he said. "He told me of them. Under the city."
He drew in a deep filtered breath, heedless of the ash taint that remained on the air.
"We start there."